and welcome to the Monday edition of Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and delighted to be with you. Today we ask you, our listener, why are you an atheist or an agnostic or a free thinker or a bright or someone in that applied self-applied label? You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. If you're a believer, this is the day to listen and enjoy the conversations. Every other day is for you, but today is just for the unbeliever. Again, 888-318-7884, the number. Here to entertain your calls, take your questions, engage you in conversation is Trent Horn. Trent is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, a speaker extraordinaire, co-author of 7 books, and the father of 2. Hello, Trent.
Hello, Cy.
And a podcaster at Council of Trent.
For those of you who are listening, I highly recommend you go to our Catholic Answers Facebook page to watch our live stream, because Cy, during that introduction, had just wonderful, dramatic hand gestures to reference towards me.
You deserve it.
Thank you. I do appreciate that. That can only be appreciated if you see them. So do check us out on the Catholic Answers Facebook live stream to add another dimension to your Catholic Answers Live experience.
I think you can catch the beginning of the show too, because we have a little equipment problem and we're lagging about 10 minutes on Facebook, I think. So the show actually starts 10 minutes from now. It starts in the future. So we're in the future right now, or we're in the past. I don't know, but we're not in the present on Facebook.
Time travel. I love it.
Yeah, Facebook time travel. But they're going to get that equipment fixed very soon. So
If you want to log on, go on in about 10 minutes. And then you'll see Cy doing everything that happened 10 minutes ago.
Trent Horn, delighted to be with you. I feel like I've already spent some time with you today. And now here we are back again in front of these microphones. And did you know I was at the radio conference last week? Did you even notice that I was not in the building second half of the week?
I noticed that you were not here because I was deprived of your presence here in the chair next to me when I was doing the show last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You did the show on Wednesday last week.
I did. That is correct.
Yep. It was in Birmingham, Alabama. And then on the way home, I stopped in the city of my birth. And I have a baby bottle here that I will give you as a prize if you can tell me what city I went to after leaving Birmingham, Alabama, on my way home to San Diego. That's the city of my birth, the city where I was born.
Bismarck, North Dakota.
No, I was not born in Bismarck, North Dakota.
You took an extreme scenic route on your way back.
As a matter of fact, I took a more scenic route than that.
Oh, that's right. Philadelphia.
Ah, you're right. That's right. The city of brotherly love. That's where I was born.
Yes. I was informed that you were sent on an odd delay over there.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I got on the plane to leave Birmingham. Settled in. Everything is just perfect. It's just beautiful day. And then they said, get off the plane. Plane's broken. And so they when I got off, they said, hey, how would you like to go to Philadelphia? And then we'll send you home to San Diego.
Ooh.
And I said, what are my options? And they said, stay here in Birmingham. I needed to get home. So I went to Philadelphia.
As one who has traveled a fair amount, it's always unfortunate when you get those kind of delays. Usually, though, you don't get sent to another airport further away from where you need to go.
I know, a lot further away.
Yeah, so, well, you're here now. And
it was worth it, though. The EWTN people are so nice. You're going to be over there, I know. You're going over there in a couple weeks.
That's right. I'll be there December 3rd to record with At Home with Jim and Joy to talk about my new book, Made This Way, with Layla Miller. And Layla will be there with me to do a dynamic duo interview for their show.
She is telegenic. You're really going to have to work to keep up with her on TV. You're going to have to do your best. Don't go in there like a lightweight.
No, I
go
am
in there ready to pull your weight.
I have got to get my TV face ready. I'm going to, do my Pilates, get a good tan on before
Very
I go.
Good.
I'm ready.
Very good. Made This Way. The subtitle of it is How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. It is selling, as I have said before, like hotcakes. And you can get it at shop.catholic.com. 888-318-7884 is our number. If you're an atheist, if you're an agnostic, if you are, you know what a bright is, right?
Bright is a term for those who identify as atheists or don't believe in God that was first coined by Daniel Dennett, though other atheists have been critical of the term, thinking that it's kind of pompous because the opposite of a bright would be a dim. And so they see it as kind of an irksome term. It's not as popular, but some people still hold on to it.
I don't know. Most of us are kind of dim. Most human. I mean, really, we puff ourselves up, but we're not that.
No,
humans only know a little bit.
Yeah, we
I'm kind of a dim.
We should know what we know,
yeah.
Know what we don't know.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate when we don't know what we know and what we don't know that we don't know.
I am going to have to – could I get a pad of paper and a pen to write a chart? I don't know what Trent is talking about today. 888-318-7884, the number, 888-318-7884. And I always enjoy my conversations with you, Trent. I have fun when you're behind the microphone. But it's a serious topic. It's not, it's a topic of great consequence, mm-hmm. whether or not one believes in God.
Yes.
And if you are not a believer, we would love to have a conversation with you, 888-318-7884. Give me an idea, though. Why? Why do you think it's important? Because I think there are a good number of people, even people who believe in God, who'd say, well, yeah, it's not that important whether you believe or not.
Well, I think it's very important because, number one, we should believe what's true. We okay. should have an accurate understanding of reality, and we should understand the most basic parts of reality, like who made everything. Why am or what made everything? Some people say that's prejudicial to ask in that way. Who? Fine. Why is there something rather than nothing?
Yeah.
What? Why am I here? What is the purpose of my life? What is there a purpose? Like, mm-hmm. Is my life for something? What will happen to me after death? Is death the end, or do I have an existence after death? Those are very important questions, and the existence of God factors into that. That really changes how you choose to live your life. And so it's important that if we're going to make decisions about how we're going to live our lives, we should do so in accordance with the evidence and with accordance the way that reality is. So that's why I think that people can have rational conversations about the existence of God, the merits of particular religions, and see where the evidence points and if they want to live their life according to that particular standard. And then there are a lot of different elements in your life that reach, I believe, fulfillment according to which path that you choose. And I found the most fulfilling one to be the path through what the Christian faith has taught.
All right, fair enough. Trent Horn, our guest, his latest book, Made This Way, a partnership with Layla Miller on teaching about the toughest moral issues we have today to your children or with your children. 888-318-7884 is our number. Trent also is the author of several other books, including Answering Atheism. So in case you were worried that he might not be qualified to handle your question, I think he is, and I think he'd like to talk with you. 888-318-7884. Okay, so I say, it's important to know whether or not there's a God because knowing the truth is important. That's just a base level thing. But you also said, does my life have a purpose? Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I find this somewhat unconvincing or unsatisfying as an answer, but a non-believer will say, well, I have purpose in my life. I give my life purpose, which to me sounds very close to my life doesn't have purpose because I can just do whatever I want.
Yeah, I think that when someone says, I give my life purpose, what they mean is, well, I choose to direct my life where I want it to lead.
Uh-huh.
So in that sense, yes, you can give your life purpose in that you can freely choose certain options. You can choose A, B, C, and you're free to choose that. Now, actually, some atheists will say, in fact, many, I think, will say you're not because free will is an illusion. But supposing that you do have free will, you can choose to do certain things in life and your purpose becomes, well, I just want to do this. But I'm talking about a higher understanding of purpose, of saying there is one of those choices or some of those choices you ought to choose and others that really are off the table, that you can be in the sailboat and you can guide your, you know, you could take the ship in any direction. What I'm saying is that there is a course that's chartered that you should follow, both in areas that you should definitely avoid.
Yeah.
And perhaps in specific areas that you have been called with certain gifts, talents, and treasures unique to you as a human being, that you're a very unique human being. And there is a reason you exist, as you did not have to. Your existence is not mere. I believe it's not merely accidental that there is this kind of providential purpose behind it to do good and in some cases very specific acts of good based on the circumstances you find yourself in. That's the kind of purpose I'm talking about, which I think is incompatible with the atheistic worldview that says everything is an accident. So, I mean, I can choose to do certain things, but at the end of the day, what determines what I do is just which one I feel like at that time. There's not really a correct answer in that regard, or an incorrect answer.
Yeah, and there are atheists who say, "Well, I can be perfectly good without God." And I know there are. I know this for a fact because one of my very best friends is an atheist, and he's just such a wonderful person. I have to say, I feel like, were I an atheist, could I actually have that conviction? Which I don't know if I'm capable of at this point. I'm not sure, but if I could have an atheist conviction, I don't think I would be a very good person.
Well, what's funny is I've heard atheists say this before. They will lob this challenge to Christians.
Yeah.
Then they'll say, if God did not exist, if it were proven there were no God, if there were no God, then would you still choose to be a moral person? And many Christians, and I myself would say, yeah, I would still be a moral person.
To a degree.
Right. And however, it's supposed to put you in the horns of a dilemma that if you say I would still be a moral person, God is therefore unnecessary.
Yeah.
But if I would choose to be an immoral person, that reveals what kind of person you really are. That deep down, and I don't think that's incompatible with the Christian faith, that deep down we have selfish tendencies and we are not quote unquote good, unless you define good in incredibly broad terms.
Yeah.
So that anybody above
the
Hitler,
existence is goodness.
Right. Or that anybody above Hitler or Stalin qualifies.
Right.
So I would say my answer to that question is this. If it turned out there was no God, I would still behave in moral ways, but merely because I don't like how it feels to be immoral, but not because it's a fact or it's just true that I ought not be immoral. That even many atheists, when they say, well, I can be a good person without believing in God, it's funny they say that almost like defensive, as if good person is some kind of an objective standard ought to meet. It'd be like if I said, well, I can be a fan of Star Wars without seeing the movies. One, why would I feel inclined to make that defense to someone who really, really likes Star Wars anyways? Now, for me, it's the reverse. If you've listened to my podcast and Council of Trent, I enjoy Star Wars very much. But to me, it seems like if it's something purely subjective, then why would I even bother being that defensive to other people in the first place? What does it matter if being good is a preference, maybe one that is more workable for you in the long run? Okay, but many atheists, when they talk about being good without God or how Christians are bad if, you know, they turned out God didn't exist, they're operating with the assumption that goodness is something normative, that we ought to be moral. It's some kind of fact about the world. And to me, once again, that seems incompatible with an atheistic worldview, that you could choose to be moral many times for self-serving reasons, but I don't think there'd be an overarching fact that you ought to be moral.
Yeah, right. Okay, fair enough. But let's let the atheists bring their point of view to this. Those of you who have called, if you'll stay on the line, don't go anywhere. If you haven't dialed, get in the queue now. We'd love to have you have a chance to talk with Trent about why you are an atheist. Why are you an atheist? That's our question today. Why are you an agnostic? Why are you an unbeliever? Any of those will do. The number, 888-318-7884, if you'd like to answer that question for us. 888-318-7884. I mentioned that you can get Trent's latest book, Made This Way, at shop.catholic.com, but hundreds of items in that store, shop.catholic.com, are on sale right now, 20% off. You just put in the promo code CALIVE18 when you go to shop.catholic.com. Books, DVDs, CDs, all that stuff, ebooks. Go to shop.catholic.com, put in the promo code CALIVE18 at checkout and save 20%.
Got questions? Visit us today at Catholic.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The Trump administration rolls back the Health and Human Services contraceptive mandate.
U.S. bishops calling for the total elimination of nuclear weapons.
Pope Francis offers prayers for the victims of the California wildfires.
The U.S. House of Representatives has passed a bill banning abortions after 20 weeks.
And Pope Francis says the death penalty is contrary to the gospel.
Your link to news headlines Catholics count on at the top of the hour. Weekdays on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Delighted to be back in studio with Trent Horn. And our question for the day, why are you an atheist? If you are a non-believer, if you either can't, don't, or won't believe in God, give us a call. We'd love to talk about your reasoning towards that. 888-318-7884. We don't hide the fact that we are, in fact, believers, but we like to have conversations about this. And we invite your call, 888-318-7884. I don't want to speak for you. You're still a believer, right? You haven't given up the faith?
Since the last time I checked, yeah.
All right. I should check in with you regularly to make sure you have not yet given up the faith. Santiago in Maryland is first. Santiago, why are you an atheist?
Hello, evening.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Thank you for – I don't know that many shows that take live posts like this to – discuss this, so appreciate your time.
Sure.
Well,
no
thank
problem.
You. We're happy to have you.
So, if I got it correctly, you want to know why I'm an atheist?
Yes, sir.
Well, the way I see it is we are all babies. By default, we are atheists until we are taught about a certain belief. Let's say you are born in a Muslim family, so you are taught about this, and you incorporate their culture and this and the other, and you get convinced by those teachings. I am, as an atheist, I'm not convinced by any of those religions or any of those ideas about supernatural beings. Okay. The same reason why Catholics or Christians are not Hindus, Muslims, they don't believe in Zeus or Thor. I have the same share of belief with you regarding those gods. I should add one more god to the list, and that would be Jesus, Yahweh. I just don't accept that as a deity the same way that you guys don't accept Shiva, Ganesh, Vishnu, Zeus, Thor, or any other deity.
Okay. Santiago, let me ask you a few questions then to understand where you're coming from.
Sure.
First, why don't you believe specifically, so the deities of other religions, you mentioned Shiva, Zeus. So there are different deities of different religions. What?
Yes, there's about 6,000 or even more throughout history in different cultures, different times. So that's some of the examples of deities that people used to believe in.
Okay. Do you think all deities have equal evidence for or against them?
I think they all have the same lack of good evidence, at least to reasonable standards, to accept them as truth.
Why do you think they all lack the same amount of evidence? I mean, would you agree that, do you think all the different deities people believe in are exactly the same, or that they differ in relevant ways?
No, they all different, but I come from a place I want to know as many true things as possible and as few false things as possible. So we need a system to sort out what is true and what is not. Mm-hmm. We understand as humans we might be limited on our ability and our resources to reach through things. There's certain things that we know now we didn't do before, and we might not know things for a long time or whatever. But the things that we're going to accept as truth, we need a good system for it. And if we go by the religion standards, it's not sufficient to accept any of those claims as a true thing, as a true idea.
Well, the standard we should use, let's just use reason. Would that be a good standard to use? Reason and logic.
That's good. That's a good system. Okay. We also need the reason works based of premises and idea. We need to have evidence that tied to our understanding of the world around us, to our reality. And yeah, we put it together through our reason. With reason alone, we might still be in the dark, but that's a good start.
Okay. So for me, I think this is problematic when I hear people say this, well, I don't believe in the Christian God. Just for the same reasons you guys don't believe in Zeus or Shiva, Vishnu, or a Norse god like Thor. I hear this objection a lot. It's called the one less god objection. You know, basically people put it this way. I as a Christian, I don't believe in all the other gods that are out there. An atheist is just like me. They just believe in one less god. But I don't think that's a solid way of looking at all the different claims, that it doesn't understand what it means for me to believe in God and what God means to me. My friend Randall Rouser gives this analogy that I like. It'd be like somebody, I'm married, and let's say I had a bachelor friend, and he said, oh, Trent, you're married. That means you don't have, that woman's not your wife, that woman's not your wife, that woman's not your wife. I'm married too. I just have one less wife than you do. And I'd say, well, wait, you don't understand what marriage is when you just define it in that way. So for me, God, like if you and I are talking about whether God exists, we got to figure out what that term means. For me, God is the infinite, undivided act of being itself. God is just perfect, infinite being. All perfection in existence is found in God. So God is all-knowing, all-powerful, all-good. There's no limits upon God whatsoever. God creates everything that exists. That's God. So for me, right off the bat, when people say, well, I don't believe in Zeus, I'd say, well, I don't believe in Zeus or Thor or other gods either because they're not really God. They're limited. They're not all-knowing. They're not all-powerful. They're not eternal. They're not just an active being. They're anthropomorphic. So I kind of take those off the table. And then I think what we're left with is what's, you know, the God of the philosophers, just the traditional God of Christianity, just the infinite one God who exists. So then we would just look at the evidence to see, all right, well, what points to whether this God exists? So you've said you haven't found evidence convincing. Has anyone ever shared with you an argument just for the existence of God? Maybe it isn't part of a certain religion, but, you know, an argument just that there is a God who made the world. Is there an argument you've ever come across for God that didn't, and it didn't convince you, and why?
Well, there's a lot to unpack, but if I hear correctly, you started with a definition of, you elaborated a definition of what God is, and then you went through the list of all these 6,000 or any other potential God, and you match it with your previous definition. Say, oh, Zeus doesn't match it because he's not all-knowing, it's not all-present. But that definition alone, I'm fine with you starting with that definition. So then I would just go with that.
Sure.
Again, I said being an atheist is a default position. I just don't have a reason to believe in anything supernatural. But if you come to present me with an idea about it, I'm willing to analyze it. And I believe that the burden of proof is in someone trying to prove something. So if you start saying that the universe is contains or comes from an all-knowing being, but well, that's the definition of an entity that I want to investigate and see what's the evidence. You have to support that that's actually the case.
Sure.
And I don't see in any of the religions, any religious explanation, enough evidence to support that as a valid reason to accept that as truth.
Well, first, I also want to respond to something you said earlier, because you said, well, you know, as babies, we're all atheists. So as babies, we lack a belief in God. But wouldn't you agree that as babies, we lack a belief in almost everything? So that just because, when we start off life, we lack a belief in God, but we also lack a belief in morality and politics and science. Babies lack lots of beliefs. So we need to fill those in. And I think God is an important one to fill in. Just because you start off not believing in God doesn't mean that's the default you should stay with. It could be seriously an error. So I think you're right that we do need to look at the evidence. So for me, if you said you've not been convinced, it would sound like you've looked at an argument and it hasn't worked for you. So if you want, I could just put forward an argument and we could just talk about that. I'll just try a simple one that I think is good to share on the air. If it turned out, here's an argument. Whatever begins to exist has a cause for its existence. If something exists, it needs to have a cause. And the universe is not eternal. I think there's good evidence from science and philosophy that it began to exist in the past. So we have a case where something came from nothing. But whatever begins to exist has to have a cause for its existence. If the universe, all of space, time, matter, and energy has a cause, then that cause has to be beyond space, time. It can't be material since it made matter and energy. So it's immaterial, eternal. If it made something from nothing, it would be all-powerful. It would have to be uncaused itself. Otherwise, you'd have this infinite chain that regresses. So when you put all that together, you get a cause of reality that has many of the divine attributes. So I think that points in the direction that God exists. And I think that just starts with a general idea of God, and then we can move towards seeing if that God's been revealed in any particular kind of religion. So that's one argument. There's others that can be shared. I like that one for simplicity. And I'm more than happy to chat with you more about what you think of an argument like that. We've got, well, we have to come here to a break here in a minute. So maybe you could let that mull over, but would you be willing to stay with us and maybe we could chat about it a little more after the break? Would that sound good to you?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, great, Santiago. Thank you very much.
Time for any comments on that?
That's what we'll do. We'll let you comment when we come back. It's just that we have a hard break we have to go to.
Sounds good.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Santiago. Why are you an atheist? That is our topic this hour and next on Catholic Answers Live. Our guest is Trent Horn. Trent's brand new book, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, is available now at shop.catholic.com. And Trent is also the author, probably pertinent to this hour, of Answering Atheism. More with Santiago and Trent Horn right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at catholic.com.
As Catholics, we hear expressions like dogma, doctrine, the deposit of faith, and of course, magisterium. And adding to the confusion, we have the ordinary magisterium and the extraordinary magisterium. So what if you were looking for one book written for the layman that explained what all these terms mean and how they interact in the lives of the church and her faithful? The fact is, no such book existed until now. Brand new from Catholic Answers Press is Jimmy Akin's latest book, Teaching with Authority. Teaching with Authority is not about specific church teachings, it's about church teaching itself. A unique and long overdue resource for Catholics as well as those inquiring about the faith, Teaching with Authority will help deepen your understanding of what the church teaches by showing you how, why, and where she does. Get your copy of Teaching with Authority today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging onto the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What are the basic teachings of Islam? How does the Quran compare with the Bible? Does Islam really encourage violence in God's name, or is it a religion of peace? In 20 Answers Islam, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, taking a look inside Islam to reveal what its own theological authorities teach and cutting through the ignorance and wishful thinking that are too common in our culture. 20 Answers Islam is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic? Let's talk about it on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We're talking with Santiago right now. We will get right to Santiago, but let me just reset our theme for the day. Why are you an atheist? If you're an atheist, give us a call. We'd love to talk with you about it. If you don't believe in God, if you're not sure whether or not God exists, or if you're sure we can't know whether or not God exists, how am I doing with those, Trent? Pretty good.
I think you're doing just fine.
Our number is 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Jacqueline Williams from Phoenix came in and took a picture with us during the break, and she brought her husband, Major League pitcher Trevor Williams from the Pittsburgh Pirates.
It's exciting. Yeah, Real celebrity here.
I was standing right next to him.
I know. Yep. I was standing next to him too.
He can throw a ball like 93 miles an hour.
I can't even drive that fast.
That's just because your wife won't let you. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. Why are you an atheist? Santiago in Maryland, are you still there with us?
Yes. Thank you for having me back.
Sure. So Santiago, just to recap for our listeners, we talked about how if we're going to talk about whether God exists, we got to get our definition right. And I agree with you, mythological gods aren't even God. They don't exist. I'm talking about the God of classical theism, all-powerful, infinite in being, not bound by space or time, that is the cause of all things. So I think it's a standard definition. And I said a good sign that points me towards God existing is the fact that things that begin to exist have a cause. There's good evidence from science and philosophy, and we can unpack that a little bit more if you like, that the universe began to exist at some point in the past. And so if the universe began to exist, it would need a cause outside of it. This cause would have to be immaterial, since it made all of matter and energy. It would have to be timeless or eternal, since it made time itself. If it can make something from nothing, it would be all-powerful. I would also say that if this cause is immaterial, then the only kinds of immaterial things that could exist would be either an abstract object, like a number, or a mind. And abstract objects can't cause anything. So now we've got some kind of immaterial, eternal, all-powerful mind that brought the universe into existence. And to me, I think that points pretty strongly towards ultimately a divine cause, or what we'd say is God. So that's a reason I find to be pretty convincing, and I'm happy to ask you what you think of an argument like that.
Well, I think that there's a lot of problems with the argument. It's a lot of assumptions and leap forwards without proper justification. For the beginning, when we talk about everything that we know in the universe has a cause, well, yes, everything that we know of has a cause, everything that so far that we have experienced to it. But when we talk about the universe itself, we tend to explain things in terms of other things that we already understand. That's how science works and any other thing. So if I want to describe a new phenomenon, I can compare it with other observations and try to replicate it and try to explain based on what we already understand about the universe, how is that possible, how it came to be. But when it comes to the origin of the universe itself, we are not outside the universe. We don't have anything else to compare it with. So we don't know if the universe must have a cause, must have a beginning. The universe could be eternal, could be multiple universes, could be...
Well, let's back up a little bit, because that's conflating two different premises. One would be whether the universe is finite and had a beginning. The other would be the premise whatever begins to exist has a cause for its existence. So first, I would agree with you that if the universe has an explanation, it cannot be a scientific explanation, because science deals with matter and energy within the universe. But that doesn't mean every explanation is going to be a scientific one. It could be a personal explanation. It could be an agent explanation. Just an agent has caused this to bring it about. So first, I think the evidence for premise one is very strong, that whatever begins to exist has a cause. It's something that, yes, we do always observe. We do not find any exceptions to it. And I don't see why we would say that this would not also apply to the universe. If we can never apply what we observe around us to the universe itself, we can never say anything about the universe. You know, we look around at things at us and they exist. It would follow from that the universe exists if everything around us exists. Also, I think there's good evidence for the first premise that whatever begins to exist has a cause. I call this the argument from atheism. So to put it briefly, I'll ask you, Santiago, what specific kind of event, if you were to witness it, would convince you that God exists?
That's a good question. Normally what I ask, I will refer to Matt Dillahunty, who answer to that question better than me.
Who?
For those who's not familiar, it's in Texas. He started to be a minister. Then.
Oh, Matt Dillahunty.
Yes, sir. So he will put it in this way. He will say, I don't know what will it take to convince me, but if there is an all-knowing God that knows that he exists, that actually exists, that God knows, why would it take to convince me? And if he hasn't done it yet, it could be either that because he doesn't exist or he doesn't want me to find that out yet.
Well, Santiago, this seems really odd to me, because I can think of a lot of other cases where, you know, for something in the universe, like Bigfoot, you know, if someone brought me a Bigfoot carcass and there was DNA testing, that would convince me. If there's something more philosophical, like the existence of numbers or moral statements or their non-existence, I'd probably be convinced with a good philosophical argument that proceeds from premises validly to a conclusion. It just seems odd to me that you can't just think of something specific, because for me, if an atheist were open-minded, if you're open-minded towards the existence of God, then you know it would convince you. But if you yourself don't even know what would convince you, how do you know that you wouldn't just dismiss all evidence? You're not open-minded to anything. You see the problem here? If you can't think of anything possibly that would convince you, then it doesn't seem helpful for me to give you evidence, because you might have set the bar so high, it's impossible to clear it. You see where I'm going at here?
Actually, I do, but I don't see a problem with that at all, because every, depending on what type of claim we're making, that's the type of evidence or the requirement to be convinced. There are certain things that are rather trivial and we should don't need to investigate much, because we know that that's common, that happens in the universe. So if a scientist tomorrow tells me that they discovered a new species, I personally would not require that much evidence, because I believe that happens all the time. If I really want to know, if it's really important for me to verify that species actually exists and discover, there's certain ways I can verify. There's like a whole scientific process to do so. But when we're talking about supernatural claims, that's a very different nature of different standard of evidence, rather than Bigfoot, that you can measure, you can find DNA, as you said.
Right. But Santiago, both of us here are making claims about the supernatural. That's the problem, that if an atheist and a Christian want to have a conversation, I'm making claims that there is good evidence for the supernatural, for God's existence. You are making the claim there is not good evidence for the supernatural. But I don't think it'd be fair if I were to say, like, if an atheist came to me and said, there's no good evidence for God, and I said, well, I don't know what really counts as good evidence or not good evidence. I don't have a definition for that. If I'm not committed about that, or like about what God even is, then we can't even really have a conversation. So, I mean, let me just give you a hypothetical example. I mean, here's one that a lot of atheists have thrown out. If I were able to pray and ask Jesus to heal an amputated limb, and that limb regrew right in front of you on someone's arm, would you find that to be at least strong evidence that God exists?
Well, first let me comment that it's very interesting that you mentioned the one type of supposed miracles that doesn't ever occur. We always hear of people who supposedly have internal disease that we cannot see, and they just recover. Amputees is one type of thing that we don't see often or at all, that someone that is an amputee by a miracle, they just grow another limb. But
what does it matter if we don't see that evidence? Because do you think that's good evidence, though, if it were to happen?
No, I think it's interesting that that's one of the things that will be very noticeable to see, like, there's something extraordinary going on there,
but here's,
and we don't even see that type
but
of
here's
thing.
My thing, Santiago, I think we've seen something more extraordinary than that. But if that doesn't convince you or rock your socks, I don't see what more I can offer you. It would just be fruitless if you said, well, I don't know what would even convince me in the first place. We can't even have a conversation. And this is something that many atheists have said would convince them. I'm just curious, do you agree with those atheists who say this would convince them, or you don't agree with them?
No, I don't agree with them, but I also have a problem with this mechanism, because we seem like we're walking backwards. We're trying to prove something and trying to find evidence that will fit that claim that I'm trying to push. Normally, that's not how we get to discover stuff. We find a phenomenon, we find something that we don't understand, we try to collect evidence, and we try to compare it with things that we do understand, and we try to find the answer that explains that phenomenon. We don't do the opposite, is thinking, oh, I believe in this thing, let me try to find out in the universe what matches this idea I already have. That's the backward way of doing this.
But Santiago, as long as, even if you already have the idea in the first place, so let's say you are a scientist, and you think, oh, I think there is an extra element on the periodic table. I think there is one missing. And this is what it would look like if it existed. So he has an idea of what that element would look like. Then if he goes out and he tries to find it, and then he goes through all the valid steps, you can't disprove him by saying, oh, well, you already thought of what the element would be like, then you went out to look for it and you found it. Much the same way, if someone has an idea of what God is like, and then he looks at the world around him to see if it shows whether that God exists or not, that's not invalid. Just because you have a particular source for an idea doesn't invalidate the idea itself. That would be the genetic fallacy. So the point I'm making is that I think many believers do that. They look around the world and say, oh, well, there's a world here. Well, why is there a world? Why is there something rather than nothing? And they reason back and see, okay, well, there needs to be an ultimate cause for this. And what would that cause be like? And you would see that would have these divine attributes. So I think that that is representative of a very open-minded way to look at the question. So for me, so those atheists who would say, oh, if you regrew an amputated limb, then, oh, okay, then that would convince them. I think the reason that would convince them is because, oh, something came from nothing. But if the universe came from nothing, that's even bigger than a limb itself. It's just hard for me that if someone is not even willing to say, okay, this kind of evidence would lean me towards the existence of God, then the whole enterprise can't even get off the ground. It's kind of a stubborn closed-mindedness. Because for me, I could be convinced God does not exist if I was shown an argument that God is logically impossible, for example, or God, the existence of God contradicts a fact we see in the world. I would just ask for atheists, including those who call the show, I hope you would give some kind of an answer to that to show you're open to an answer to the question. But I hope that's helpful for you. We did have you on for a bit of a while here, and I thank you for that. And I hope you'd call back. Maybe we could have a longer discussion another time.
Thanks, Santiago. Our topic today, why are you an atheist? If you're an atheist, if you're an unbeliever, if you're not sure whether or not God exists, you are welcome to call and share your reasoning with us. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. And we've got a free ebook that we're giving away right now on our Facebook page. Just go to Catholic Answers Facebook page and you can get a free copy of The Apostasy That Wasn't, The Extraordinary Story of the Unbreakable Early Church. In The Apostasy That Wasn't, Rod Bennett narrates the drama of the early church's fight to preserve Christian orthodoxy intact, even as powerful forces tried to smash it to pieces. It's available only for a limited time for free on our Facebook page. Go to the Catholic Answers Facebook page. You'll see a banner that says the Apostasy That Wasn't, and then you click that, you get the free ebook.
Hi, this is Bishop James Wall from the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
That retreat absolutely lit me on fire.
Your talks and the spiritual counseling, I just want to learn so much about it. And as a parent of three boys, what can I research to continue that fire to impart that on my boys?
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn is our guest today. And our question, why are you an atheist? If you're an atheist, we'd love to get a call from you. You can share your reasons with us, and hopefully we can engage in some dialogue about that. 888-318-7884. The number, Joe, is up next. Joe, why are you an atheist, Joe?
Hey, Cy, and hey, Trent. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. Happy to.
So I'm really an atheist. I mean, I was born and I was born technically Protestant, but my mom was Catholic, and I later ended up converting to Catholicism. And even when I was a Protestant, I had a very sort of Catholic background, just in the sort of theology. And I've turned away from it as I've become an adult and become an atheist, mainly because the first reason, because I don't think there's a lot of good evidence at all for Christianity. Or Catholicism in particular. And the second reason is because I think that there's a lot of inherent contradictions within Christianity, and maybe even more specifically Catholicism, things that logically do not seem to make sense to me and seem to, even if there was a God, would seemingly exclude Catholicism from being the true religion.
Okay. Well, normally I like to start at the more basic levels and work our way up. But we were doing that with Santiago earlier, so it might be fun to start at the other end and work backwards. What are some of those contradictions either in Catholicism or Christianity? I guess, what is one big one that sticks out to you?
Let me try to think of a good... Well, I think one of them would be morality, and how, to me, when I read the Bible in particular, morality really seems to change for God over time. You know, we'll have the Old Testament God commanding the Israelites to go into another nation state and slaughter all the men, women, children, even the infants.
Yeah.
And then we'll flash forward to modern Catholicism, who says killing, you know, abortion's wrong. Why? Because it's killing infants. Mm-hmm. And that seems a very big contradiction there. Either it is wrong to kill a defenseless infant, or it is not wrong to kill a defenseless infant. It can't be right because God says so. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, what you're referring to would be what's called divine command theory, which is the idea that morality is rooted simply in God's will rather than his nature or his character, that God could just command good to be evil or evil to be good, and morality is wholly arbitrary in that regard. But I don't think that's what we see in Scripture for two separate reasons. First, I'd preface this by saying if a person, a believer, finds contradictions in Catholicism or even Christianity, that does not necessitate going all the way to atheism. For example, if someone, let's take this, a person finds passages in the Old Testament that are morally problematic about God ordering, allegedly ordering his people to commit genocide, to kill men, women, and children. What would someone do with that? Well, I don't think you, if I already know I have believed God exists and God is good, then the first step I could say, maybe I just don't understand this text. Maybe I'm not understanding the meaning of the text. Maybe this isn't a literal description of events. In fact, in my book, Hard Sayings, I provide evidence that these descriptions, such as Israel slaughtering the Amalekites, have all the hallmarks of non-literal, exaggerated, ancient warfare language. Like when we say our favorite basketball team slaughtered the competition. We see this in other ancient works. The king Merneptah of Egypt in 1208 BC erected a stele saying that he had completely laid waste to Israel. Israel was, his seed is not. Yet, of course, Israel still existed for a long time after that. And in the Bible, when it says like the Amalekites were slaughtered, man, woman, and child, the Amalekites still show up over and over and over again. So I think that that might be exaggerated language. But suppose it weren't. I mean, so that's one stop you might go to. Say, well, I'll just believe in it, but I guess it must be that. One could also say, well, does God have the right to end our lives? If God makes me, makes you, makes Psychelet, God gives us life, well, it seems to me he's not under an obligation to give us a certain amount of it. Life is a gift from him. He can give us however much he wants. And so if God can choose to end our lives at any time, and he, it's within his right to choose a means to do that, then that might be an option that he has that helps us to understand these texts. And then, of course, there's a third option where the texts are recording God working with people who live in a barbaric age, and so he's tolerating behavior that is not the ideal so that he can move his people eventually to ideal behavior in a very savage, barbaric time. So I guess for me, like if you bring that up, there's multiple different ways to look at the problematic texts without abandoning them entirely. So do you think that it's probably better for someone that if they have problems with this, they should explore those options before just jumping ship entirely?
I would agree with that statement. And I definitely did explore the options and came up with, usually I'll get an answer along the lines of the three you listed.
Sure.
I don't find either one of them to be at all convincing, which is why the question of the problematic text still lingers in my mind. But I would agree.
There's also a fourth option. There's also the fourth option, which I don't accept, but other people might, is that those passages are just not the inspired word of God, that the Bible's not inerrant. I don't subscribe to that option. But would you agree that that could be, that's one that just could be valid, just God exists, Jesus rose from the dead, gave us the Bible, but it's not 100% inerrant. I don't subscribe to that view. But it's one that could be valid.
I would agree that that is an option.
Okay. Yeah, and I think
that's an option, but it's a pretty problematic option.
Why would it be problematic?
Well, it's problematic because, I mean, I'm not going to, it's like if you want to just pick and choose what of the Bible you're going to throw out and say, well, maybe this is divinely inspired, maybe this isn't. I mean, you'll have people throwing out just whatever they want to that doesn't seem to fit with their own beliefs. They'll say, well, we don't know if this is inspired or not, so let's throw it out of there.
Right. No, I think that that's a valid...
Again, that is supposedly what the role of the church is for, is to determine what what is and what isn't truly the will of God.
But. Right. But first of all, I would say that we do this all the time. Like if we read a work of ancient history, we sift through it and see what is reliable, what is not, what is factual, and what isn't. We do this all the time with other kinds of works instead of just saying 100% for or against. However, I do believe that scripture is inerrant, but at the same time, it can come in a lot of different genres. So that's why I personally lean towards the view that these passages just aren't literal in nature. But let's say even that they were. I mean, let's go back to that bigger question. Do you think that God, if he does make us, if he gives us life, I don't think he's obligated to give us a certain set amount of life. Do you think God could make us and then end our mortal earthly life 10, 20, 30, 80 years later, whenever he wants to? Would that be within God's right to do?
Yes, in the sense that I think it would be right for him to take our earthly life now. If somebody never, you know, if he's just going to take our earthly life early just to damn us to hell, that's another matter. I don't think that's right. But to just take our earthly life, yes, I think God could do that.
Okay.
But I don't think that he could tell someone else to take our earthly life. I think that would be wrong because he is therefore telling them to commit mortal sin. And I don't think God could or would do that.
Well, I guess for me, something can be a sin or it can be evil because a person does not have the authority to do that. But I do think people can delegate that authority. Like, imagine you're back in high school and you get on the PA system and you say, classes are canceled for the day, and everyone left, and you just decided to do it on your own authority. You'd probably get suspended if you did that. Now, the principal could get on the PA and say, classes are suspended today. He has the authority to do that. So if he has the authority to do that, then he could transfer that to me and say, hey, Trent, a special treat because you're student body president. Yes, I sir. And this is true. I was in high school. You get to announce that on the radio today. And so if I'm doing it precisely under his authority, I think it's still fine to do. Now, of course, I am not meaning to make light of the visceral reactions people have to texts that are describing genocide with this particular example, or saying that the dismissal of classes is comparable with orders under authority to kill human beings. Don't think that I'm doing that. I'm just trying to show that if something is permissible by an authority could delegate that. And so ending the lives of human beings, if God is able to do it, he can transfer that to other people. Now, I think some evils are just wrong. They go against reason itself. And so, you know, God cannot command, he couldn't directly command people to commit rape, for example, or the torture of children just for fun or things like that. So when I look at it that way, I don't see it as being problematic. So I guess we're coming close to the end of our show here. I don't want you to be cut off. Do you have any other thoughts on that or the faith in general, or I don't know what you think of that.
That's definitely a fair response. I still think it would be odd that there would be times in which, and it'll also lead people to, you know, it'll lead people to, you know, like even in Catholicism, the history of the church, you know, mm-hmm. the Crusades and all this kind of stuff. The Pope would say, this is the will of God that we go to war. And I'm not saying the Crusades, I'm not here to paint the Crusades as some horribly negative. I understand that there were many practical reasons for why they happened. But still, all throughout history, people have sort of used that reasoning of, well, God says it's our right to go to war against you and kill you and take you over.
If someone just said that God has just revealed this through some kind of private revelation, that would be problematic. But when you look at both, first in the history of the church, the church has given reasons that we can know through reason that the killing of human beings is wrong. Going into God's holy sites and taking them, like what happened in the Crusades, is wrong. And I think the same thing happens even in Scripture. Scripture talks about how God tolerated the evil of the Canaanites for 400 years before vomiting them out of the land to protect God's people from these abhorrently evil practices. I tell you what, it's unfortunate our time has come to a close, but if you stay on the line with our call screener, give them your email address, Joe. I'll send you some resources you could look over, and you could always call the show back and we could have another conversation.
Joe, thanks. We'll leave it right there. Why are you an atheist? Why are you an atheist? Why are you an atheist? You can phrase it any way you want, use any emphasis you like. That's our topic for this hour and next. Trent Horn is our guest. If you'd like to tell us why you're an atheist, give us a call, 888-31-TRUTH. Back with more right after this on Catholic Answers Live.